not in my original.
I don't.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
That's not a clue.
Yeah, I like the word mistakenly, so can you explain that?
Assemblywoman Pat Abney is also here. She represents this district.
Right.
And she may have a bit more historical knowledge on that topic.
Mistakenly?
Yeah.
I have a student
Well, it's just, no, it's just a general question. It has nothing to do with it.
The question is, do you know how the homeowners actually ended up citing their homes?
An error in surveying, but quite a long time ago.
Surveying. And how long ago was that? Pre-71?
I would guess perhaps so. I'm not sure exactly how long ago that was. I believe it was there in San
Francisco. Mr. Chairman, if I may continue. So we have 0.6 acres of state land and 1.5 acres of municipal land going to the homeowners. In return, the municipality of Anchorage will receive approximately 4.8 acres of valuable public fishing and recreational access along Bird Creek. This has been also a long-standing trespass problems related to public access to Bird Creek. Additionally, an amendment was adopted in the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, which will remedy a surveying error which occurred when the land was originally conveyed from the federal government. The tidelands, which are normally or traditionally have been reserved to the state in the original conveyances from the federal government, were not identified along Bird Creek, and consequently were not later identified in the state's conveyance to the Bird Creek Regional Park to the municipality of Anchorage. What we are doing here, what the committee substitute represents, is a conveyance of approximately 1 to 2.5 acres of tidelands to the state to correct that original conveyance error from the federal government. And we do have unanimous agreement on this. This is something that existed long before I started working on it. I know that former Senator Szymanski worked on it for many years. Finally, we have put together the solution, and the municipality is very supportive. The state DNR is totally on board, and so are all the homeowners.
The only problem is I get the vote on this, and I can tell the history of this.
Yes, Ms. Munson, how many landowners are we talking about?
It looks like about 4 or 5.
I believe it's 4.
3 or 4.
Is this a straightway exchange?
Well, it is the conveyances that eventually end up, that the state gets, will be transferred through the municipality, actually. The conveyances of the land go to the municipality. The conveyances to the state from the homeowners go through the municipality, so that is the deviation. Otherwise, the conveyances are directly between the homeowners and the municipality and to the homeowners and the state.
Okay. My question was, is this equitable exchange between the homeowners, municipality of Anchorage, state of Alaska?
We believe so. And I think that the homeowners agree, the state agrees, and the municipality agrees.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Chairman, is there the mention of DOT? What DOT property or rights of way are there in
the
state?
There is an existing DOT gravel pit.
I've never seen that.
I believe, in the section, part of that.
Okay, so they would continue to use that gravel.
That's
pit.
Correct. And the conveyance to the homeowners of that particular parcel would be conditioned upon access by DOT to that continued use of that gravel.
I see the road right of way in there. Are there any other rights of way, public rights of way? Where's the Alaska Railroad in regard to this?
It's way off.
Over this parcel sits like this.
Yeah.
Down.
I'm just trying to visualize. I know the area slightly, but I'm just trying to visualize where this was.
Mr. Chairman,
I'm principally trying to figure out where it is and what state interests are involved.
Yeah, I just think this looks like it's pretty complex, but I wanted to go back into the beginning where these people, this is not Diamond Jim's, is it? Okay, so did these people originally homestead or had OTE or, I mean, I want to know how the original survey got screwed up in the first place.
I don't
and then what happened since then that, you know, like here you got a land exchange between the municipality of Anchorage, the voters of the municipality of Anchorage approved the land exchange in the municipal election. However, closer review of land ownership and reveal a portion of one of the three tracts to be conveyed to homeowners by MOA, including DOT. And the material site within the state park.
Right, that's the
big piece. Right. But I just like to know the history of that so I can understand. Probably a title search would probably be.
I apologize for not knowing all the background. The Division of Parks, the superintendent for the Chugach State Park would plan to be on teleconference. Right. And he had that history.
Well, see, I don't expect you to know all the minute details. Apparently, you got an exchange between municipality, DOT, which is the state, and the homeowners. Everybody agrees. But we got to vote on this, and I want to understand how we got here in the first place.
My understanding was that the property owners owned the parcel here at Tenants in Common.
But I guess what I'm getting at is that, okay, this is pre-71, I assume, because that's before the park. So obviously they had to get the land from the federal government somehow, right?
Right.
And
that's correct.
Oh, an old homestead.
Old homestead, yeah. And I just want to know in a survey the history of it.
Yeah,
so.
I'm sorry, I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
But I can certainly find that out. It's definitely.
Yeah, I'd like to, if you can find that out from the history of it.
Not a problem.
Passing, I'd like to comment that. In South Fairbanks, when the military was in a rush to build Gaffney Road, they put in actually right on the meridian line, 32 feet off? And so all of South Fairbanks has jogged over 32 feet from where it should be. So I've seen surveys like this before.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't want to obstruct the passage or the forward movement of this bill, but I'd like if, you know, if you get the history for me by tomorrow, so I can better understand this.
On the item of title search, that issue came up in the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, and we did look into the issue because obviously the question was why did these people build on their property and why wasn't that resolved by a title search?
That's what
and
I'm getting at.
A title search essentially was done, and I'll just read from you here that kind of describes why this problem arose. All the deeds of trust involved in these transactions were seller carryback financing, which would indicate that the policies issued by the above title companies were probably owner's standard policies, insuring the purchasers, and they did not involve extended coverage, structural encroachment coverage. So that was the reason why this wasn't resolved to the title company.
Can I ask one more question? Sure. Were they trying to sell this property, and that's how come they found out about the problem?
I believe that that's a part of it.
I mean,
yes, there has been encumbrance on this property as a result of all of this, and there has been extensive litigation related to it as well.
Now, I'd give me the answer on that, the history of that, and I'd like to see the steward's titles.
Yeah.
Stuart Title, right? Yeah, I see that.
Representative McClain. If there's any no more discussion, I'd like to move committee substitute for Senate Bill 231 CRA out of committee with individual recommendations.
And
the zero fiscal note.
Without objection, a bill moved from committee with individual recommendations. The next bill will take up the House Bill 388, Representative Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What this bill would do is set up an assistive technology loan guarantee program. I've been working over the last year or so with credit unions and the Bankers Association to develop a mechanism whereby that banking community can have some additional, security in making loans to people who sometimes aren't necessarily making either steady income or high incomes, but that with assistive, various assistive devices can live and live productive lives outside of institutions. The state currently has a very small grant program for the purchase, direct purchase of various assistive technologies, and some of those may be TTY machines that people are familiar with for the deaf, or building ramps for people who need ramps in their homes. But it's a very limited pool of money, and we don't provide anything, for instance, for modified vehicles, those types of things for people who need lifts in their vehicles or who need modifications of gas pedals, lots of little things. So what we've come up with is the HESCS for House Bill 388 provides for a 90% loan guarantee. You'll see that there's a zero fiscal note. And why there's a zero fiscal note is you don't have an impact until you have a default. The DVR goes through an exhaustive process whereby they try to identify either free sources of whatever the device is, make a determination whether or not the device is appropriate to the disability, determine whether or not they're Medicaid eligible and the device is Medicaid eligible for receipt for reimbursement, those types of things. And literally, before they would agree to the subsidy, or not the subsidy here, but the loan guarantee, they will have had to make a determination that there is no other way for this person to be able to otherwise obtain the device. And then they would make that determination, and would then there's a loan process, loan application, and then it would forward the loan application to a participating banking institution or lending institution. And working with the lending institutions, what we wanted to do is make sure we had something that did what we wanted it to do, that the banks would participate. Most of these loans, in fact, I think the maximum amount is a $10,000 loan, and the repayment period would not exceed 6 years. We've tried to make it flexible, recognizing that, again, some of these people with handicaps don't necessarily always find themselves in the highest-paying jobs, and so trying to make the terms flexible enough so that they guarantee repayment. In other states that we looked at, and I recall 17 other states that have programs like this, the default rate is very, very low. And part of the reason is that people don't want to live in institutions. They want to be out. And there's a certain empowering aspect of being able to get out of their community. And they don't mind paying their own way to the extent that they can. So the incidence of default with this group of people tends to be very, very low. And I offered to the committee, and I hope we can move it along. Mr. Chairman, I would move that we pass the CS for House Bill 388 Hess from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying zero fiscal note.
Is there objection? Without objection, the bill moves from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal note. Next bill we'll take up is House Bill 66.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Basically, this bill passed, working its way through since early last year. What it does is that it establishes an administrative procedure that in Division of Family Youth Services and Department of Motor Vehicles that will allow the revocation of minors' driver's license when they have violated laws dealing with alcohol or other controlled substances. Tobacco was added in the Judiciary Committee. The situation is that under present law, there's been 6,000 instances of these violations and only about 12 revocations, and it requires that they be judicially
suspended the driver's license, adjudicated, and therefore it's very expensive and very seldom done to send them up through the adult court system. This would allow the Division of Family and Youth Services to handle it and make the recommendation for revocation for the period of time as outlined in the bill. 30 days, I believe it is, and second consequent offenses up to Maddie, I believe. I think it'll be allowed a lot more effective, a lot send a signal to the juveniles that at this at the right time of their life that could prevent some serious injuries or social problems later on in life. The fiscal note is very modest. Results after the first year, a little under $8,000 a year of general funds to handle this.
Okay, the only question I'd have or concern that I'd have is that while controlled substance or alcohol definitely affects and impairs your ability to operate a vehicle, and I think there's some connection, even though I don't think minors should smoke or possess tobacco products or things like that, I don't think there's a direct connection between impairment and possession of tobacco. So,
Mr. Chairman, I share the same views. I would have
smoke gets in your eye.
Yeah.
Beg your pardon?
Smoke gets in your eye and impairs your driving. Representative Barnes.
Mr. Chairman, I had been sitting over here reading this bill believing that I was misreading it. I could not believe that you could associate tobacco with impairment in driving. And certainly drug abuse and alcohol abuse is an impairment to driving. But there isn't any way I'd support this bill with this particular section in here, and it doesn't have anything to do with me smoking. This is just a bit much, I think, to impose on someone for smoking a cigarette and driving.
You've never dropped a cigar in your pants.
Very lapsed.
Yeah. Smokers die young, and that impairs their ability to drive.
I'm still alive.
Mr. Chairman, I think that the only place that the amendment that was put in there in judiciary appears is on line 7.
Page 2, line 8.
Yeah, it also appears on that other the new section 3.
New section 3.
There's several places there where it appears it'd have to be amended out. Yeah.
Page 4, line 28.
Mr. Chairman.
Page 3, line 2, line 6.
Well, it doesn't, with the relation to alcohol, it doesn't say they are driving and are impaired. It just says for possession of, and since it's illegal for youth to possess, that's the test. They wouldn't have to be driving. And the same test should apply to tobacco, which is a drug and which is illegal for people under 19 to possess. So I think we should keep this.
Hi, Mr. Chairman, I would say that I oppose the possession of tobacco under, as amended, within the judiciary, because you can have the impairment under alcohol and controlled substance, but I just don't see any reason why you would have to have your license revoked because you are under a possession of tobacco. And Mr. Chairman, I wasn't done. I would make a motion to delete any reference to possession of tobacco in the bill.
Okay, there is an objection. Representative Kopanen.
Yes, I think it isn't just possession of tobacco, but under the statute would mean it would have to be adjudicated, for example, purchasing tobacco and or giving it to another minor, being sort of the point being that you have a juvenile who has violated a law and you are attempting to deal with not just the possession of tobacco but their violation of a law. and you wish to make the point that laws are not to be violated, even if they're not immediately germane to the problem there.
Sure.
Yes, when you look at it, what happens is that the kids are not only losing their license for possessing cigarettes, but they're also being forced to pay a fine of $100 to get their license back. And so I really do have problems with the judiciary version of the possession of tobacco.
Sure. Can I cite you 1176.105? Because that might be real short. The person under 16 of age may not purchase a cigarette, cigar, tobacco, or a product containing tobacco in this state. We're talking about purchasing, not possession. And then the purchase of a tobacco product by a minor is a violation. We're not talking possession, we're talking about the purchase of. So if that kid is purchasing and violating the law, I don't think you ought to have the license.
Representative Ullman.
I wonder if we could all take this home and read it tonight. I mean, I haven't read it. I think it's, you know, something we ought to, like, think about.
Okay, we'll take it up as the first bill tomorrow afternoon.
At a first bill?
Yeah. Okay, with you, Bert?
I have a bill in subcommittee that's ready to come back.
Really?
Single
I don't want it out. I want to leave it in.
It's municipal.